What's up, folks? This is Kyle Thomas from Exhorter, and you're watching Aftershocks TV.
All right, Aftershocks TV. We're back this week with another episode for everybody. And this week we're doing something a little different on this episode this week. But before we get into our topic here, I'd like to welcome my co-host for this week, a familiar name and face. We haven't seen this gentleman in quite some time on the CMS network, but he is an alumni of the network. He's been doing his, we'll get into it in a little bit. We'll talk about it a little bit, Tanner, about what you've been doing over the last year or whatever or so. But of course, we got Mr. Tanner Poppett from Poppett's Corner. What's going on, Tanner? Great to see you. Oh, look at that.
Right at the exact moment.
I guess you're doing great with those fireworks, man. Absolutely.
I'm on fire, dude. Yeah, no, I'm doing good, man. Thanks again for having me. I've missed everybody. I hope all is well with the fans and everyone on the network. And we'll get into it, but been doing a lot. So that is primarily the reason why I am, that's primarily why you haven't seen me in a while. So, how you been, Matt? What's going on?
Doing good, you know, just doing what I've been doing for the last 5 years. A lot of these shows, obviously, we've got Aftershocks TV, as you know. I kind of put that in the back burner for about a year after the passing of our late, great, good friend, Bob Nalbandian, and started up this past year. You know, me and Tom Brennan have been doing, most of the episodes here, and we've had Chris on a couple, Chris Aiken, of course, and, I've got a new podcast as well called, video cast, whatever you want to call it, called Seismic Sounds of the Underground, which is more on the underground heavy rock, doom metal, stoner rock scene. That's pretty prevalent these days. As we'll get into that a little later, as you've been kind of in getting in those waters yourself a little bit lately, as we'll talk maybe towards the end of this episode. Everything's good, man. Aftershocks TV is back. It's great to have you on. Obviously, you've been on Aftershocks TV in the past, talking about Madras, your band, and of course, Poppett's Corner and a bunch of other topics we've discussed. And I appreciate you coming on and talking about a very important topic to me this week. And of course, that's we're doing a tribute episode this week from the band Leeway. This past week, we had the unfortunate news of vocalist Eddie Pompanios, a.k.a. Eddie Sutton, Eddie Leeway, vocalist of Leeway, passed away after his four-year battle with lung cancer. Eddie, he hung on for quite a long time there, 4 years, which is a lot for lung cancer, obviously. He really fought to the end. Obviously, between his passing and, of course, as you see behind me, he's right behind me with another one of my favorite guitarists, one of my favorite musicians out of New York City, Mr. Michael Gibbons. He recently passed away as well in December 2023, late last year. So two legendary guys and a legendary band for me that have passed. And unfortunately, Tanner, Eddie and Mike were the only guys that were really keeping the Leeway name alive. For the last handful of years, Eddie had been going out touring with the band. Well, he's doing his own version of the band, I should say, called Leeway NYC. Michael would get up there and he'd play with Eddie sometimes as well. And Mike, of course, put together the documentary that came out last year as well, 2023, that I was blessed to have been fortunate enough to have been included in. And so, with both of them gone now, it sort of really marks the end of the band, man. And so it's been this is obviously, I'm from Queens. It's a band from Queens in New York. And so this band has a special place in my heart and for pretty much no longer going to be. And so I wanted to do sort of a little tribute today about them. And so I appreciate you, joining me for this episode, man.
Absolutely. Yeah. Looking forward to it, man. I remember the first time I heard Leeway, it was a while ago. I believe the film that you particularly were in, I believe it was the last one as well with Bob. I don't know if that was
That's
the last
correct.
One he's never was a part of, but it was it was really cool to see you guys in it. It was an interesting watch because it made me rediscover, even though primarily that film was sorely kind of all the information was taken from like the first two records, because I think that was, obviously those are their I mean, those are their classics, you know. You can't go wrong with Born to Expire and Desperate Measures. So it's like, you know, but yeah, it was really interesting to learn a lot about the band. You know, and yeah, it's awesome. And again, thanks again for having me, man. But I remember the first time I heard them, if I can just briefly touch upon it.
And please, yeah.
I would love to know your thoughts and when you discovered them as well, because it'd be interesting. Again, you're a little older than I am, so you probably discovered them probably in the 90s, I'm assuming. Mine was like 2010.
Okay.
So about 14, 15 years ago at this point, I remember being in college and a random kid, for some reason in one of my classes, had this t-shirt on. And it's, if you, I don't know if you have the album covers handy, but it was the Born to Expire LP, which I had never heard of Leeway, to be honest with you, at that point. But to me, that specific album cover is pretty iconic for at least the speed metal kind of era. So I actually discovered them all with that specific album. And when I heard when I basically heard it, it was like life changing. It's a weird album. Eddie has like a very unique voice, for that style of music.
Yes.
And it was kind of my first time hearing New York hardcore ish. I don't know if you can consider it a hardcore band or a thrash band. I was just mostly a lot of like punk guys were into it. So I found out about Leeway through a punk rocker in college.
Interesting. Very, you know, it's interesting you say through a punk rock, you know, being Orange County, because, you know, Bob, speaking of Bob, that's how he discovered them too back in the 80s, was through some punk rock friends. But what's interesting is, yeah, they obviously, yes, they're considered a New York hardcore band. But when you go, and this is obviously these two records up here, as you mentioned, Born to Expire, and right next to it, their Desperate Measures. You know, when you listen to it, though, there's not much punk really in the music. It to me, it's a straight up, and a lot of people, you know, it's basically, they basically took a blend of Metallica riffs and the attitude and with the New York hardcore, say with the Agnostic Front, and they sort of blended them. You know, it's classic New York hardcore crossover, I should say, a classic crossover band, crossover thrash. Of course, they've got the speed of punk, but riff wise. Straight up, mostly. I mean, those riffs are straight, you know, Metallica laden riffs, you know, more thrashy riffs. But it's interesting because Bob had said the same thing, and he discovered them as well through punk fans. And so it's kind of interesting that, you know, punk crowd is what really, you know, introduced Leeway to you and Bob. Whereas for me and most people, I think on the East Coast, it was more the opposite. It was more through the, you know, the metal, you know, the crossover, you know, the thrash metal fans. But yes, the first time I heard Leeway, you're correct, it was in the 90s. You know, obviously they were around in the 80s, but I'm 48 years old. I was, when they were playing, you know, in the late 80s, and they were playing in the clubs and so forth in New York City, you know, I was still like only like 13 or so. So I wasn't really, I was right in that cusp, you know, I wasn't old enough just yet where I was seeing them live. The first time I heard them was, you know, they actually had, it was on their second record, Desperate Measures. They had a video on Headbangers Ball for the song called Kingpin, which is a really cool song. It's not, like I said, it's not my favorite song by any means. Even, you know, if I had to pick a song to have people check out, that wouldn't have been the one. But at the time, it was pretty, I don't want to use the word groundbreaking, but it was different because it did have a little, you know, it was more groovier. You know, as you said before, Born to Expire was really straight up thrash and hardcore, you know, fast the whole time, you know, straight, just super speed. Whereas Desperate Measures, like a lot of things that happened towards the end of the decade in the 80s and in the early 90s there, it got a little, it was more groovy, you know, had more of the groove metal elements. But it had a little bit of blend of each. But the song Kingpin that was on Headbangers Ball, which we're going to, you know, play for everyone here in a little bit, that was, had actually some more urban influences in it. Even some hip, like, you know, he kind of semi-rapped, if you want to call it, in a part or two in it. You know, now you're right. You know, you mentioned before how Eddie, his voice, and that's really, you know, Eddie's passing, that's the thing. To me, Eddie was the best frontman, not just stage presence, but his voice in New York hardcore history. because nobody could sing like Eddie. Eddie could sing. He was a real vocalist. You know, he was a singer. I mean, he didn't, you know, most, you know, hardcore and thrash bands, right? They were just kind of doing your harsh vocals or doing more of the aggressive vocals, where Eddie had a great voice. And I mean, he was into, you know, he would listen to like Billie Holiday and James Brown. He was a lot into a lot of soul and funk from the '70s, and it shows with his, you know, his style of you know, singing. And so, yeah, you're correct. He was very different than any other New York hardcore singer and frontman.
Now, I don't know what it is about New York specifically. I know you and Tom did an episode on, you know, like Anthrax being like a precursor to the whole rap metal thing. I would always, I would almost put Leeway in as well, with, because they were doing, it was the whole New York thing was kind of adding that hip hop flavor, and a lot of hip hop was coming from, you know, New York, so they didn't really have the internet. So they were kind of, I'm sure that all blended and influenced each other. And that's how hardcore punk became a New York hardcore became a thing. So I just wanted to add that onto that episode that you guys did too. I would almost argue and make a case for Leeway, because there's a few songs on Desperate Measures that really kind of blend those two, you know, well, 9-10 years before you had the Limp Bizkits and things like that. So just want to preference that as well.
Yeah, no, it's a good point. You're right. You know, they were really, it's kind of funny you say that too, because obviously in the early 90s, New York hardcore, yeah, you're right, it really started to it went groovy, and then it not only went groovy, but it did take on those super urban element, you know, urban influence, I should say, urban influences. Obviously, the biggest name of the band that took it and really wrote it and became super successful was Biohazard. And yes, you know, obviously Biohazard was around at the same time they put out their first record in about 1990, and their debut record. And it was around the same time when Desperate Measures came out, even though Desperate Measures, I think, was already done by like 89, I think, and didn't come out till I think 91. Because even Born to Expire didn't come out, I believe, till 89. That thing was done in like 87, you know, because they had record label, you know, issues and that were just holding up the release date for so long. But yeah, no, it's a good point. You know, I mean, they, and like I said, it was just, you know, Eddie was, you're right, he was the first guy to really have that look too. He, you know, the rest of the band, as you see here, Mike had long hair. He was, you know, straight up metalhead. The other guys didn't really have much of the herbal influences, but Eddie would kind of run around, you know, with the sport, you know, the sport uniform, you know, gear on. They used to call it B-boy. That was the title for someone who looked like that, a B-boy. You know, he had knee pads on. I mean, yeah, you know, it's typical 80s interesting style he had. But that's a good point, you know, because yes, they were never like the greatest thing about Leeway is, like you said, they had so many different sort of, you know, I mean, obviously they were a New York hardcore / crossover band, but yes, they definitely brought a lot of other elements into the sound, especially with Desperate Measures. And then obviously getting into the mid-90s, early to mid-90s, a couple of years later after Desperate Measures, they did put out two other releases that sometimes people don't know about. But those releases, this, the third album, Adult Crash, decent album, had a couple of, you know, some good songs, but it was not their best effort. And I think the band has been pretty, you know, obviously admitted that pretty, you know, consistently with interviews and so forth. It wasn't their best record, but their last record, Open Mouth Kiss, that was more of a rock record. Same thing, more of a 90s influence, you know, alternative heavy rock, sort of alternative metal album. And that was actually a really good record. That's where Eddie's voice really shined. He always said that was his, his big moment in terms of where he really felt like he was a real vocalist, that he really did a great job, you know, in the studio and so forth. And it is a really, really good album, Open Mouth Kiss. But yeah, that's a good point there about, yes, they did definitely bring in some of the B-boy and those urban elements for sure from Eddie.
Right. I just wanted to, again, preference that, because you guys did a killer episode on it, but that was a point that when watching it, going, man, I hope they mentioned something about, you know, some, because there are other bands that did the same thing that Anthrax did. They were just the big band that, you know, made it popular, but there's the whole New York kind of scene is the reason why you have bands like Limp Bizkit.
I agree.
In my opinion.
No, you're right, dude.
Because again, you had the hip hop thing coming out of there. I mean, Grandmaster Flash was like you know, from that whole area, obviously years prior, right? But mm-hmm. New York yep. is kind of where a lot of like that style started to develop. I don't know if that was because of the surrounding area or any of
no,
that
dude,
nature.
It totally was, man. You're 100% right. You know, I always tell people that, you know, when they ask me like what I listen to, you know, in the later part of the 80s and early 90s, of course, I was always into metal and rock and stuff. But yes, I did get into rap in that time. I probably stopped listening to rap around 94 or so, because then you started having the Tupacs and stuff. And I really wasn't. Once that came along, you know, Notorious B.I.G., I wasn't into any of that stuff. So from there onward, I was not. But I do like and really love enjoy some old school rap from New York City. But yeah, dude, it was everywhere in New York. I mean, that was the thing. Like, you couldn't not be influenced by. And that's why you saw guys in Anthrax. You saw Skidey and all those guys wearing their Public Enemy shirts or whatever. It was really, it was so part of the city. You know, and it was not just on a radio station, but it was really seeping into the culture. So it was completely normal for you to be into hardcore and metal and also listen to rap, because it was kind of, you know, if you look back, I don't want to make this all of a sudden into a hip hop or a rap podcast, but just explain a little bit what you're talking about there. If you listen to the old stuff, the beats and everything is very rock oriented. You know, I mean, they took obviously some rock samples and they took old blues samples and so forth. But it was their sort of rock and roll. You know, I mean, these guys didn't know how to play instruments. You know, they came from poverty, so they weren't getting lessons. They didn't have all the gear and everything. And so they just were taking their parents' records and they were just singing over them. And so using samples and so forth. But it was so entrenched in the New York City culture that I don't know of hardly anybody that wasn't influenced, you know, or listened to at least some rap at the time. And it just naturally, obviously, yes, blended, you know, in with the rock because of, you know, just urban. Now, just and quickly, you know, I was talking about, you know, before, you know, a little bit about, you know, I guess why Remy Leeway didn't take off, you know, like they should have, right? Well, like you mentioned the two records, as we said, Desperate Measures and Born to Expire, you know, super classics. A lot of it was label, you know, because of the record label. You know, they were on Profile Records, which was pretty much a rap label. You know, it was an urban label. You know what I mean? So, I mean, and New York hardcore was an urban style of music. That's the thing. It's even though it was heavy and, you know, a lot of metal influences and so forth, it was those bands were all from the inner city. And so New York hardcore had, you know, such a, you know, a conglomerate, an amalgamation of all these different styles. That's what, see, New York hardcore back in the 80s was, it wasn't necessarily like this one style, you know, where everyone looked the same way or they sounded the same way. It was all a bunch of different sounding, where they people looked, everything. It was just being an individual. And Eddie, you know, I interviewed Eddie back about 4 years ago during the pandemic. Yeah, 4 years ago, 2020, after the pandemic. He was one of the first interviews, top, you know, maybe first 10 or 15 interviews we did for Aftershocks. And I interviewed him, and that's what he was kind of, you know, was mentioning about hardcore back then, was it was about being an individual. If you were someone who's an individual and you didn't necessarily fit in, you know, to a group or whatever, you know, you call it, that's what New York hardcore was all about. There wasn't like a dress code or a musical code that you had to sound like this or look like this to be part of it. And Leeway is a perfect example of that, because no one looked and sounded and dressed like Eddie, you know, and he was one of the biggest vocalists, obviously. So, but just quickly, yes, Profile Records signed them. Like I said, Born to Expire was done in 87. The record had already been out. So all the fans in New York City already knew about the record. They had it. They'd had the tape that they bought at the shows. And yet that thing didn't come out until 2 years later. And so by the time these records all came out, Desperate Measures, you know, 2 years later and so forth, these things already been done. You know, fans already been hearing these songs played live before. And it was just it was a bad label. All the bands that were on it, Cro-Mags was on Profile, Leeway, Murphy's Law, and then the only other non-New York, but was a non-New York band called Wargasm, which if people listen to Sockwave Skull Sessions, Bob Mayo, who was a regular on there a few times, that was his band from Boston. Yeah, so.
Absolutely.
Take his head.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. All classic bands who release classic records. Right.
Yep.
Now I got to mention this too, is what has maintained, in your opinion, because the documentary didn't really touch upon it, I would have loved to have heard more on the subject, is it, what has kept the name alive? Like, why was I shown leeway in 2010 by a punk rocker? You know what I mean? Like, why, like, how did it carry on through these records? Are obviously classics, right? They didn't really get wide distribution.
No.
Yes, they were, they had a video on MTV. But what do you think, in your opinion, has kept the band to where we're still talking about them even till this day? You know, was it the Mike Gibbons guitar playing and the riffs and the vocals and the songs, or I'm just generally curious, and or is it the iconic album cover, or
I would, you know, it's a good question. You know, when I think back into like the late 90s, I remember there was a reissue for both of these records on this label called Another Planet. And I remember, and they were doing it with the Crowbags. They did it with a bunch of bands, a handful of bands that maybe, they would just re-release the records on CD. You know, these albums that came out in the 80s, so they weren't really on CD at the time, right? They were just on vinyl. So they re-released them on CD, and they kind of packaged them together. I remember buying the Leeway one because I kept hearing Leeway. You know, it's kind of funny. Even when I heard the, you know, Kingpin video back in the early 90s, when they put out their third album, Adult Crash, I remember listening to one of those like Sunday night shows, metal shows. And back in, I think it was in Long Island, actually, in New York. And they had a song on there. I remember the guy going, "Oh, Leeway, remember these guys?" And he was talking about it. I remember, like, it's the first time I was hearing a lot about the band themselves. And I think what's kept them going all these years really is just because Born to Expire, really, I would say, is the reason. Because it's probably considered a top three all-time New York hardcore record, along with Cro-Mags' Age of Quarrel and probably Agnostic Front's Victim and Pain. Those are probably the three quintessential. If you ask anybody, give me three records to listen to that has that good old-fashioned quintessential New York hardcore sound, those are the three records that most people will tell you is what really catapulted, you know, the genre itself. I think with Leeway now, that what separates them from, say, a Cro-Mags or from Agnostic Front, I mean, it's the musicianship. You know what I mean? I mean, like you said, like Mike Gibbons, you know, I don't know if people understand really what an amazing guitarist this guy was. I mean, technically, you know, I mean, he's obviously only on the two records. He didn't play on the third and fourth records. He was out of the band by then. You mentioned the movie, the documentary, real quick. You know, we'll get into that a little bit, but it was really Mike Gibbons' story. You know, it was his take on the Leeway, you know, chapter from those two records. But Mike, you know, I remember Eddie was saying that, you know, Mike was the kind of guy, every neighborhood always had, you know, was known to have a guitarist that was a bit of a prodigy. And Mike was sort of Queens' prodigy, you know, guitar wise. He tried out for the band and he got in very quickly, and he could do things that really, you know, New York hardcore, other guys in New York hardcore bands couldn't do. You know, I mean, New York hardcore, remember, you think about it, it's more, it really derived from punk. And we all know punk isn't, you know, isn't the best musicality wise. You know what I mean? But Mike came from more of a classic metal background. He was into Iron Maiden. He was into Judas Priest. He was more of a metalhead. You know, the other guitarist, AJ, who was just, you know, one of the best riff. I mean, the riffs on these records is unbelievable. You know, obviously, Eddie said, you know, they obviously were influenced by bands like Metallica, like everybody was at the time. So they sort of took that thrash, but then they kind of, you know, gave it that sort of punk hardcore edge to it. And, you know, between those two guitarists, you know, they can go back and forth. Like I said, Mike's phenomenal lead. I mean, he could play anything, Eddie Van Halen stuff. I mean, that's, you know, he could play Eruption. He could play all that stuff, like, easily. I mean, he's just phenomenal. When you have those two guitarists going back and forth, one can shred with crazy riffs. He had great tone. I mean, that's the thing, too, I think. The tone on those records, guitar-wise, are just phenomenal. And then, like I said, it comes down to Eddie's voice. There's no other singer in New York hardcore that sung like Eddie. You know, if you look at those other bands I mentioned, you look at Cro-Mags. Well, Cro-Mags really never known for their vocals. You know, I mean, John Joseph, I think he's a good singer. Back then when he started out, though, their first record, Age of Quarrel, you know, he was sick when he recorded. When we talked to Paris Mayhew, I mean, he had a cold. He was sick. So it's not the greatest, you know, vocals in the world on an album. And then, of course, Roger Merritt, you know, with Agnostic Front, he just has his own style, but it's not, there's nothing, you know, musically, technically that's really good about it. Eddie could sing. He could sing soulfully. He could sing heavy, and he just would fly around the stage. So I think just because of their live shows and their music from back in the day and their musicality, you know, in 2010, well, right around that time, you had a lot of the 80s nostalgia kicking in. And so this is an 80s band, right? They started in the 80s. And so people are going back, listening to their old records. Or, okay, who would I love? I'd love to see Leeway. I'd love to, you know, get those records and so forth. And so, I mean, they've always been huge in New York hardcore. You know what I mean? Like, no matter where you went, they were just as big as Cro-Mags and Agnostic Front. They're right up there with them. You know, maybe just a tad below them, because those bands, the difference is those bands continue to put out music over the years, especially to the 90s, where Leeway really, you know, Eddie had a bad, you know, admittedly, he's not shy about it. He's talked about it a lot. He had a bad drug problem for a long time, and that's what really hindered their success. They really could have been a big band because of him and those guitarists, but, you know, it is what it is, right? It happens to a lot of bands, unfortunately, yeah.
I would say that Eddie's voice, for me personally, because I'm a big kind of crossover, you know, fan.
Sure, so am I. Yeah, so am I.
Gangrene would be like the closest I would consider to that, to Eddie's kind of style ish.
Okay. I see, yeah.
But obviously Gangrene was a punk band that kind of transitioned into more of the thrash. So they were kind of doing it around the same time as Leeway. Oh, yeah. But totally. You're right with the whole timing thing plays a huge part. Also, too, the song choices for the singles probably didn't play a lot in their favor, because they have a lot of great songs. But you're right. I don't think Kingpin would be my choice for a single.
No,
I don't. Like I said, I don't really know whose decision that was. But, you know, if you had to choose which one would you suggest, where nobody's ever heard it, you get one shot for your music video, go.
Oh, for Leeway? I mean, to me, like, so it's interesting. I am more, maybe because I'm a 90s guy, but I am definitely more of a Desperate Measures guy. I mean, I love Born to Expire, don't get me wrong. I mean, I just got it on vinyl. You know, I mean, I love it. It's right next to it. It's like 1A, 1B, really. But if you know, that's always the question. Which one's better? If you ask me, I mean, I think because, like I said, I'm a 90s guy, and I just love all the different influences in that record. They have your hardcore, you got your metal, like you said, you got your groovy stuff. You've got, I mean, it's so, you know, sequenced very well throughout the record. But if you told me, okay, one song to play for someone to really, you know, get Leeway, or to me, it's the last song on Desperate Measures called The Future, ain't what it used to be. That song, just the riff, the tone and the guitar and the riffs on that are just so freaking, I mean, like I said, it's very Headfield-ish Metallica, and just awesome. And just a great groove. Like I said, it's more of a groove metal record. And so I'm a huge fan of groove metal. Like, I love thrash, but, you know, to me, it's like, I love, like, when it just kind of settles down a bit. That's why I love Pantera and Prong and all those bands, Sepultura, because they just kind of, you know, they just, the tempo was just a little bit, you know, slower than your traditional thrash. And so, yeah, the quintessential song, if someone said, you know, give me one song, and I've never heard of these guys before, I want to get what they're about. The last song on Desperate Measures is called The Future Ain't What It Used to Be. That'd be the track.
Interesting. And it's a long, I think it's like the longest track on the album, if I'm not mistaken.
It is. At the end, there's like a part there where it kind of drags on a little bit, but, you know, and it kind of fades out, but it's their best. It's one of the best, one of my favorite, you know, like, quote unquote, New York hardcore songs. I mean, that riff and just it fires me up every time I hear it. That just never gets old.
So Desperate Measures, I feel, obviously is better produced because it came out a little bit later. It's more, rich of a mature album than Born to Expire. I think Born to Expire has that grit. So maybe more punk, punks were into that because of the grit, because, you know, that's part of the style of music. But I really feel like the album cover could have been better on Desperate Measures, for me personally. Like,
I agree.
It wasn't just a shot of the band, you know, with a dead end sign. Like, you know, look at the album covers. Which one, if you were in a record store and you saw those two album covers, which one would you buy?
Oh, it's no question, of course, Born to Expire. Yeah, I mean, like you said, Born to Expire is a classic album cover. It really is. Not just a classic record, but the album cover is, yeah, that's one of my favorite, obviously, album covers ever. Yeah, so Desperate Measures is not a good cover. You know what I mean? As you see, you can see the difference between, I don't know whose decision it was to put, you know, what's interesting, you said production-wise. Now, really, when talking to with Eddie and Mike, you know, obviously, you know, Mike, me and him did me and Bob did a really cool episode with him and Howie Abrams, and Howie was, you know, one of the big, you know, record executives at the time in New York with the New York hardcore bands, and he later on went on to Roadrunner Records and signed a bunch of, you know, he even went, you know, a bunch of bands on that label. He even went on to, you know, sign like some Grammy Award winning bands later on. Oh, he's a great musical mind. And also he's from my hometown of Queens Village, which is really cool. Cause it's kind of a town in Queens that some people never talk about, but yeah, man, you know, those guys will tell you, actually they disagree. They like the Born to Expire production better. And if you do listen to it, and the reason why is, you know, Eddie was never really happy, and I kind of see it what he says now, but he was never happy with the vocals in Desperate Measures because the effects that were put on it. If you listen to Born to Expire, it's just him straight up singing. If you listen to Desperate Measures, he was actually, it's pretty interesting. I didn't know this, but when I was talking to Mike, I don't know if it was Mike or Eddie, but they were saying he was being compared. It's in the movie too. It's in the Leeway documentary about the effects were very similar to Ozzy Osbourne's in his, you know, No More Tears album. And if you listen to it, and it's true, I think they used sort of the same effect for it, you know, and it is, it sounds a little muddled or whatever you want to call it. Eddie's got a great voice. He didn't really need a lot of effects. Even though I love that album, like I said, I'm still more of a Desperate Measures fan. Just a tad. I can see what they were talking about in terms of the, you know, production, the vocals. So both of these records were recorded. It's funny you mentioned Gangrene, because Gangrene, I think, recorded their albums in the same place, which maybe why it makes sense why it sounds kind of similar. It's up in the Normandy, studios up in Rhode Island. A lot of bands recorded there. Cro-Mags. I mean, you can, this, it's funny, that place, you can listen to records. I could pinpoint it from the drums, the sound. Like when I first heard Gangrene's Older But Wiser, I remember listening and hearing the drum sound going, that's the Normandy sound. That's it. Like, you know, I could tell it is. I looked it up and boom, that's it. You know, it really has a unique, there was a very unique mixing board or something in that studio that gave it really this unique sound. That everybody, Born to Expire was the first, I believe, album that was actually recorded there. And then everybody else was doing the pilgrimage up there because they wanted that sound, that guitar tone, which they were never able to do. All these bands tried to do it, but they couldn't do it.
Now, here's another question for you. Because growing up in New York, you probably have a different perspective than I would, say, in California, not being born yet.
Sure.
But I'm curious when Leeway first came on the scene and like where the scene was at that time, their influence on and how it inspired like the whole realm of the bands coming out of that time, or was it an amalgamation of just all the bands playing together? And then because New York has their own, anytime I hear a New York band or like a Boston band or East Coast, they have this unique sound that like California doesn't have. And I don't know, I was trying to kind of pinpoint it before we even got on here, and like what is the sound of New York bands and East Coast bands compared to like California bands? And I don't know if it's the atmosphere or the bands that were coming out at the time or the styles or so what would you say Leeway provided to the New York kind of hardcore scene that wasn't there before?
Well, you know, I don't know if there really is any, to be honest with you. Now, the reason why is this. Like I was mentioning before, both those records came out long after they were recorded, right? So by the time those, you know, like I said, Born to Expire, 87, that was done, didn't come out to 89, right? It was already an old record. Desperate Measures, you know, same. Now, a little bit different because that wasn't necessarily, you know, I don't think put out, you know, but they were playing those songs live already. And you got to understand, it's just the timing, right? So Leeway was just part of that crossover, you know, whether it was with Corrosion Conformity, you know, they were from North Carolina, but they moved to New York City. So they were living there and in those circles. You know, you had, you know, Prong and Sick of It All and the Crumbsuckers, you know, all these bands that were real crossover bands. They were their own unique thing. Agnostic Front became a crossover band as well when he did Cause for Alarm record. Yeah, because you had that, you had two labels out. You had Combat, right? That was like the more of a metal label, but a lot of these bands, some of them were, you know, Agnostic Front was on Combat and so forth. But then you also had In Effect Records. That was Javi Abrams who ran that. And it was basically, that was just a sister label of Combat, because they, you know, they realized that, okay, not everybody who was into the Combat thrash stuff really maybe might not be into the punk, you know, oriented stuff that was coming out In Effect. And the thing is because, you know, punks and metalheads didn't like each other, you know? And so it was like oil and water. Leeway was one of the bands. If there's one thing that they brought probably to New York hardcore, wasn't it before, is they brought the metalheads out to the hardcore shows.
So unity, right? Like, you know, between the two, okay to go to a show and like support these bands.
I would say more, it's funny because Eddie said, I wouldn't say unity, it'd be more community. They, you know, maybe community being like, so because they were so metallic, right? You couldn't like mistake those riffs. It was such thrash riffs. And like I said, Mike was a straight up metal guitarist. So they had so much metal in their sound, yet they were this New York hardcore band, but the metalheads couldn't ignore them. And so they were one of those bands, you know, that really brought a lot of the long haired metalheads out. You know, I mean, they got one of the things. I mean, I don't know if this is true, but what I've read or what I've talked to, people or even the band themselves, you know, Eddie and Mike themselves, you know, Leeway was pretty, they got a lot of the suburbians to come out to the shows. You know what I mean? So New York Hardcore was mostly a very, you know, urban city thing at the time. Now, of course, they played in and around New Jersey and Long Island and New York, upstate New York, all these places. But Leeway was a band that did really well outside of New York City. They did just as good in Long Island, the suburbs, as they did in the city. And so they brought a lot of those fans out, you know, because they were more metallic. And so I would say they were really the band. If you listen to Cro-Mag, I mean, Cro-Mag's obviously, they went, you know, metal too when it came to their second record, Best Wishes. But then after that, they kind of, you know, I mean, they always had a metal part to their sound, but they were definitely more of a hardcore and punk influenced. Same with Agnostic Front, right? Those are usually the bands where people think of New York hardcore and crossover. You know, those are the bands you usually kind of think of. Leeway was the band that was really, like I said, thrash oriented. You couldn't miss it. So it's like, if you liked, you know, I mean, if you were a metalhead, you like thrash, you listen to Leeway, you're going to be a fan of that band, New York hardcore label or not, you know? And so I would say that's the contribution they made, because if you look at these two albums, when they came out with their third and fourth records, by the time the 90s hit, the whole landscape was changing, as we've been talking about, right? It became more urban influenced. I should say this. There was two ways bands would do it. They either went more, you know, rap influenced. Okay. Like Agnostic Front even kind of did that. They got a little more urban style the way they dressed, and with their One Voice record, that went that way. Or you could have went the other way, which is what Leeway did, was more the, what they would call post hardcore or post metal. Right. Which is basically sort of alternative-y, grungy type of sound. And so Leeway went that way. And the reason why they went that way, where everyone else really kind of went more the urban way, is because they had a great singer with Eddie. He could sing high notes. He could sing. Those other bands couldn't do that. You know, Biohazard, Agnostic Front, you know, Cro-Mag could not do what Leeway can do musically because they didn't have that vocalist. And so they went that way, more Leeway, to the rock orientation. They really, I think, and they could have been, and they tried to for a little bit if it wasn't for Eddie's, you know, drug issues, but they really tried to become, yeah, more of a radio, I guess, kind of friendly band, if you'd say. But, and they could have done it. And they were good records, especially Open Mouth Kiss. And they had, because they had the singer, the frontman to do it, which no other New York hardcore band, in my opinion, had.
Absolutely. And in saying this is as well as, you know, the Lee Wage to me, when I first heard it, I kind of thought they were like a, you know, a huge, huge band. Like this is the band because they were doing, you know, that kind of crossover kind of thing at that time. You know, this is the late 80s we're talking about. So they were kind of ahead of their time with that whole style, would you say? And it's just, I don't know what, you know, since they were kind of ahead of their time, I don't know the bands, what bands they could have toured with to help that name grow to even be bigger, because they were kind of like one of a kind. So with that, again, it's like, it's kind of like Motorhead, right? They're like kind of one of a kind at that time that kind of came out and kind of infused two different styles, but making it cohesive to where like both of these fan bases can get into it. Now, I don't know what bands could tour with that.
That's a good question. You know, so the biggest tour, and they did a big tour, across the States, out here to California and so forth, was with Bad Brains. Now, yeah, I don't think that's your best fit. You know, I think they would have been, I think what it was with them, they were a very crossover thrash band, but they were touring with more punk bands. They were playing with more punk. Like you said, Bad Brains, look, they're a legendary band, of course, but they sound nothing like Leeway. You know, Leeway, it was more metal. And so I would have loved to see Leeway, tour with a Metallica or do it with those thrash bands. You know, go out with a Testament, or even on the East Coast, you know, go out with some of the thrash bands back there. And really, you know, take it, you know, because they were in that scene, you know, the New York hardcore scene, it's interesting because even in the 90s, it was the same way. You'd have these different sounding sort of bands within the genre. It wasn't all punk oriented. In the 90s, remember, you had bands like Candiria and these bands that were like jazz metal, you know what I mean? That were in this New York hardcore thing. That's a great question, because you're right. I really think if they would have toured with a Corrosion of Conformity or with, you know, Prong and all these bands, and in the 90s, they would have went out with Helmet or something like that, more of the alternative metal bands. Yeah, White Zombie or something. Yeah, I think they would have definitely, that was probably their bigger, even though they're huge, like I said, in New York hardcore circle. You know what they remind me of, really, in another band that was like that a lot out here on the West Coast is DRI. You know, DRI was that band that started off, though, really punk. They were that hardcore punk, but morphed sort of like, you know, Suicidal and so on. They morphed into a crossover thrash sound, but they never really abandoned that. Even into the 90s, DRI was still more of a thrashy, you know, metal band, and same with Suicidal. And so I think if they would have done that, you know, they could have, you know, really, but like I said, a lot of it was just, they were just a band that, because of their label situation, it really destroyed them, you know, because of those records getting released late. And then by the time those were done in 91, 92, New York hardcore had completely changed. They decided to go more of the grunge rock, post-metal, post-hardcore route, which, like I said, I think they could have done fine on, but because of Eddie's, you know, problems, they did, you know, they toured overseas. They did some European tours and everything, but he had a really bad drug problem. And I think that's what pretty much derailed him in the end, unfortunately.
Sure. You know, and you're mentioning DRI. So they're from Texas. So that would be like mid.
Well, they moved. Yeah. They are, but they moved to San Francisco in the early mid 80s. Right. Yeah.
So like, it's interesting that like even so West Coast Suicidal, Midwest DRI, East Coast Leeway, that could have been a great tour package, you know what I mean?
Sure, like I said, that time, yeah, because
it would make sense.
Yeah,
you know,
I mean, they should have just went out with more metal sounding bands. Bad Brains, it's just, you know, they don't riff like these guys do. Like, you know, you're not gonna, most band Bad Brains fans, you know, to, and look, like I said, metal and punk were just not sort of, you know, mixing well with each other. Now, there's plenty of people out there, of course, like both styles, but you wouldn't have long hair and go to a show, a hardcore show. You get your ass beat. So, and that also happened out in L.A. I mean, talking to Bob, that was the same thing. So that wasn't just an East Coast thing. That was pretty universal, at least here in the States. But yeah, that is a great point. I really think if they would have toured with more metallic sounding bands, they would have been really big in the metal scene. You know, and that's an unfortunate thing is, you know, New York hardcore people love them, but you know, it was really I think the metalheads really could have taken the band, you know, if they would have tore it up or hitched to more metal bands instead of, you know, sticking with the New York hardcore punk stuff. they could have been a lot bigger.
And it's interesting that punk fans claim the band. Like they claim it as a punk band.
Yeah, I know. It's I mean, I guess, you know, you see, listen, if you listen to Born to Expire, there are some songs on there that, yes, they're very, like I said, hardcore punkish, but more than that, you know what I mean? But I guess at the time, you know, I mean, when they started out in 84, they were called The Unruled in 84. And I guess they had The Enforcer, which is their first demo tape. And that was, I guess, you know, had a little bit more of a hardcore punk feel, a little more punk feel. And it wasn't until Born to Expire was starting out where they really, the guitarist AJ incorporated a lot of the metal riffs. But I think it's like we always say, it's because of the scenes. Yeah, and I'm with you. I don't, musically, I don't get that because, yeah, you know, a lot of punk people, they hate metal. So it's like, I don't understand how you can like Born to Expire or Desperate Measures and say, oh, you know, yeah, I like that because it's not as no, I hear very little punk in old Leeway's music. That's just me. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, but the musicianship that Leeway specifically has for me is like the next level for like a crossover thrash band.
Yeah.
Like they were musicianship wise, they're the best as far as I'm concerned. I mean,
I agree.
Pokey on the drums, like can't get much better than him behind, you know, having that solid foundation. You can't get much better.
Well, Pokey was on Desperate Measures and he had more of that. Yeah. That groove to it. You know, he had a really good, you know, a great punch to his drum. And the first, you know, Born to Expire is crazy. The guy who recorded on that, this guy, Tony Fonteo, he was a guy they just got. He was from Brazil and they needed to fill in because they think their drummer quit, like, you know, a little bit before they were recording the album. And he came in and just fucking killed it. I mean, the drums on Born to Expire are outstanding, you know. I'm with you. Listen, like I said, that's why they're my favorite New York hardcore band. And even though I don't really consider them musically in that same vein as all the other classic New York hardcore bands. Because musically, I mean, they were a step above everybody. They really were. Nobody could sing like Eddie. Nobody can play leads like Mike. And no one could play riffs like AJ. I mean, all those bands, in my opinion. You know what I mean? I mean, as I said, Cro-Mags are great. You know, Paris Mayhew is a great rhythm guitarist. And obviously, Harley Flanagan's a great bassist. But none of those guys could sing. And same with Agnostic Front. You know, like I said, those guys are a great band and they're characters and they're great people, you know, Roger and Vinny and stuff. But musically, no one could touch Leeway. Nobody.
You know, and obviously the whole control factor comes into play here when it comes to being in a band. Now, I'm curious for you, besides the drug addiction thing, what could they have done better on because that was in their control, you know, because obviously you're mentioning the records, you know, they were recorded earlier, but they came out later. So, I mean, just in terms of maybe songwriting, do you think that could have played a part in having the band continue to garner that legacy instead of us kind of just talking about the first two albums from the band? Or,
well, look, I'll be honest with you, they could have come back. I mean, they did come back. They did a tour. Mike was telling me in the mid-2000s, they did a European tour. And he said it went really well. They all got along, but there was typical shit on the tour where they got there and whoever booked it was like, they were staying in like these shitty hostels. I mean, like one, you know, sleeping on floors. And he was like, dude, you know, at that point in his life, you know, he was in his mid-30s or whatever. He had a good job. He was a corrections officer, I think. And, a court officer. I think it was a court officer. And, he's like, you know, he basically paid for hotel rooms for them. He's like, we're not living in, we're not like, you know, 20 years old anymore doing this. But he said it went really well and reception's well. But after that, it just, they didn't, I don't know why they didn't, I wouldn't say capitalize, but like when you first heard them, 2010, all right, they could have gotten back together. And trust me, I mean, that's why I'd been clamoring it for a few years. I know Mike really, you know, in his discussions and talks with him, and I mean, you can see it on the interviews I've done with him in Aftershocks, and also the one we did with Skull Sessions with Bob. Yeah, he was all about it. I mean, he wanted to get the band back together. It came down to one person. It was AJ, the guitarist. And the bottom line is, I think by then it was too much. I think, you know, too much that went on over the years where it was just too hard to get back out and play, you know, play with each other again, I guess. And they tried. you know, but basically he told me, Mike, in the end, basically there's guys in the bands in the band that won't talk to certain people in the band anymore. So it's your classic, you know, I mean, listen, with AJ, cause he was the main songwriter, AJ, he's him and Eddie founded the band and he's the main songwriter. He could have gotten, if he could have gotten, I mean, you know, he's kind of disappeared, you know, it's very interesting. I'm really shocked that he hasn't, you know, maybe now, I don't know if he's going to, now that these two guys are gone, maybe he feels like, okay, he can go out and tell maybe his side now, whatever it is, but he's just not the type of guy that likes to stir anything up. He's not into, he doesn't do interviews. He doesn't talk to anybody. And I think a lot of it, he's probably very disappointed in, you know, ultimately, you know, the amount of work they put in and really the potential he had and the fact that they didn't reach it. I think it's really probably disappointed them over the years, you know, because I don't understand why they wouldn't come back. They could have they could have been huge again. I mean, really, they could have been playing festivals. They could have been all this stuff, but I think there was too much water under the bridge. You know, there's too much bad blood there. That was hard to put all the water under the bridge, I think, between Eddie and AJ and so forth. And I mean, listen, you saw the documentary. Okay. Mike tried. Okay. He tried to get everybody in the documentary. The only one who was going to originally do it was Eddie. And he even backed out at the end. He just was probably tired and was like, you know, I don't want to, you go ahead and do it. I don't want to stir up anything else. You know, I'll give Eddie credit. He's really always sort of protected the legacy. Even when he put the band back together and it was just him and he went out and they called themselves Leeway NYC. You know, to let people know it's not the original band. This is, you know, it's basically almost a cover version. It's him and a bunch of different musicians. He got that band, Rhythm of Fear. They're a thrash metal band down in Florida. They were the backing band for a long time, but he got guys in New York to do it. But he put out a couple of songs. He recorded some new songs about 4 years ago. I think 2 or 3 songs. And he tried his best. Mike, you know, got back in there, but he was ill too. Mike, as you know, he passed away. Like I said, in December, his health wouldn't allow him to do it. And I just would have wished that those guys would have been in the documentary, AJ especially, you know. And I think, well, I told you, me and Bob were, you know, just another thing to throw out there. Actually, go ahead and say what you're going to say before.
Well, I was going to say Pokey's in it, but I don't know if that interview was done for the film or if that was just kind of found on some, you know, somebody else conducted the interview. And
it was found on YouTube and stuff. Okay. It was YouTube, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I'm just saying so that gives it some, you know, more validity than just Mike Gibbons and
it did because he has to ask some questions, but he didn't get filmed or interviewed for the documentary.
Gotcha.
You know, it was just stuff that he was talking about that someone filled him outside of a show one day. You know, that was really it. You know, because he plays for, I don't know if he still does, but I know he was playing for Agnostic Front. I'm not sure. I think he still does. Yeah. He's still their drummer. So, I mean, so they didn't get, like I said, I mean, just here's the movie right here, The Forgotten Ones, that came out. This just came out back in October. You know, this is a new documentary. And as you know, me and Bob are both in this. And, you know, me and Bob were approached by Mike to do the film with him. You know, Bob obviously was known for his films. Mike respected Bob, was a fan of him, and asked Bob to do it and asked him, you know, if we would help him. Bob declined. I got involved then, and I was going to help out and do it with them. But one of the things, and I'll just be straight, you know, reasons why I decided not to do the documentary, is because of that specific reason. There would be no documentary to me, a Leeway documentary, like a real legit one without AJ in it. If you would have had AJ, Mike, and Eddie, that'd have been fine. You know, you didn't need to get Pokey, just Eddie and AJ, the two original members. You got to get them both in there. Eddie was going to do it and, AJ didn't want to do it. Pokey didn't want to do it. Nobody wanted to do it. Zowie, Jimmy DePoodle, the bassist, you know, these guys, none of these guys want to be involved with it. There's a lot of, you know, one of the things I found out, because Mike was even telling me, he was asking guys like even Tommy Victor from Prong and all these musicians to say a few just words about Leeway. Just give me a minute to say a great band, blah, 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 blah. They wouldn't even do that because there's so much, you know, interrelationship bickering and all that stuff where these guys didn't want to piss anyone else off. And so they didn't want to be involved in a movie where if AJ's not in there, or Pokey's not in there, I don't want to do it then. You know, it's just too much of that because nobody wanted to offend anyone else. And yeah, and Mike was right. In a way, it's kind of silly. All you had to do was just say, yeah, it was a great band. but they just didn't want to be in the movie because they knew that these guys, if AJ's not going to be in it, and if any of the other guys aren't going to be in it, it's, like I said, to me, this should have been called Leeway. You know, for when I said the Forgotten Ones, I told Mike, you know, probably not the best of name because it wasn't so much that people forgot about him. The fact is not enough people knew about him. You know what I mean? Is what it was. And he agreed to that. But also, it should have been just, you know, sort of been, you know, been marketed more as Mike Gibbons' story of Leeway. You know, but listen, he tried to get everybody in it and he wanted to do it. And I'm glad he did it because there is at least something out there on it.
And absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I guess you would call it Leeway, the Mike Gibbons story.
Pretty much.
That would have been, that would have been fine with, yeah, but I mean, at least again, something exists of it. The problem is, you know, I just wish they had better representation just throughout their whole career. Cause that seems to be a sticking point with me. With Leeway it themselves is just, they never got like the proper representation, proper management to represent them, the proper promotion to, gosh darn it. Want that?
One more time. There we go.
There you go. It's not doing it right now. Anyway, but my point still stands is, yeah, it'd be nice. It would have been nice if they had that proper representation, you know, and something exists. That's great. But you know, if this was like done, I don't want to say legitimately because it is still legitimate, but
sure. I know what you're saying. You know,
on that kind of higher level, I would have loved to have seen like
I know what you mean. I mean, we all would have. I mean, that's
like
why
when he on interviews with like, you know, mic'd up and it would have
just
been awesome.
Done the right way, man. I mean, I agree, dude. You know, I mean, as you see in the doc, it's a lot of us, myself and Bob and everyone else that's in it, you know, mostly we just recorded our stuff on our phones.
Well,
you know,
and not to cut you off here, I'm sorry to do this, right, but like I would have loved to have heard more information on the same things, like because everybody would have had a different side to that story, you know, and I only got like one or two sides to
it. Well, no, you're right. And most people had said, obviously expressed the same thing. Like, I would have loved to hear more from AJ or more from Eddie about this and that. And, you know, I think it's because Mike was an original member, you know, he was brought in. I mean, Born to Expire was already done, you know, when he came in. And so he did the leads on the album, but it was already done out. You know, I mean, Desperate Measures, that's why it's such a different record, Desperate Measures, because it has more of Mike's imprint on it. But yeah, I mean, obviously, I would have loved to heard the original, you know, when they first started out, these are guys going to Catholic, you know, they were Catholic school kids, you know, Eddie and AJ and whoever, and they all met up there and then they just, you know, jammed, formed a band. And then, boom, I would have loved to heard the early beginnings in Astoria, Queens about the band. I think everybody would have. But as you know, like we all said, you know, and you said management before, that's a key word because that was, you know, obviously the main, if you watch the film. And it's something that's been synonymous with those bands that were on Profile, the Cro-Mags and Murphy's Law and Leeway, is that the manager, his name was Chris Williamson, you know, and like a lot of managers, he was a bad manager. You know, he took a lot of the money and he did what he did. I mean, at the same time, some of the members over the years were like, look, you know, but without him you know, signing them and managing them, they never would have even made it to this far. So, you know, there's a catch 22 there. It's like, okay, well, you know, sure, the guy was an a-hole and he screwed us like a lot of managers do in bands, but he also got them on these tours and did this stuff that they wouldn't have got on themselves. You know, one of the things that Eddie told me interviewing him, you know, during the pandemic about 4 years ago was because I brought that up, obviously, that's always been a big point of contention with the band. And he said, you know, the thing about New York hardcore in general is that the bands were not very organized. You know, there was no metal was very organized. You know, you had your labels, you had your manager. It was very organized. New York hardcore was just, you know, it was just a bunch of street kids, you know, mostly. And so obviously I think that's why a lot of labels, just like they did with rap, you know, they saw rap. It was like, oh, we can make money off these guys and rip them off. I mean, that's what Profile did. To Run DMC, they did that. You know, Profile was, you know, the label they were on was Run DMC's label. And so they did that to Run DMC. They completely screwed those guys over for years. You know, they didn't make any money. And so, like Eddie said, they just weren't, it wasn't organized, the New York hardcore scene. They didn't have all the proper people in the channels and so forth that you'd go through to eventually get discovered or to go on specific tours and booking agents or whatever, what have you. This is all really a DIY thing, you know, New York hardcore, just like punk in general. It was, that's why it's very punk oriented. So, That's one of the reasons why all those bands just didn't do it. They just didn't, you know, and they were young. I mean, these are all very young kids too when they were all signed, and they just got taken for. And yeah, it's unfortunate. But you know, the movie, you know, Leeway the Forgotten Ones, like I said, in the end, I'm glad Mike did it, even though I understand people's
their qualms, you know, about the film. At least it exists. I mean, dude, it's not easy to do films.
No, it's not, as we know. Yeah.
yeah. I mean, it is and it isn't, depending on how much, you know, you're organized here. How would you, and I don't want to say in closing, because I'm sure we have tons more stuff to talk about, but in your opinion, how would you sum up Leeway's legacy in like a sentence, a paragraph? Like, what is their legacy?
Well, and we could sort of, you know, we're going on an hour here, so, you know, I don't want to, I mean, I could speak about Leeway all day, you know what I mean, in New York hardcore in general. Their legacy, well, as we were basically, my take, like I said, they are the best music-wise, musicality-wise, talent-wise, musicianship-wise, the best New York hardcore band to ever have done it. Straight up, you know? And like I said, because they had pieces in that band that no other band in that scene has. And so, in terms of their legacy, and what's disappointing is that it could have been so much more. You know, I mean, that's the sad part is, you know, you tell people Leeway who, you know, everybody knows, you know, who obviously Agnostic Front is, even if they're not a fan, they know the name, they know the Cro-Max. You know, Leeway should have been right up there on par with Cro-Max, you know, in terms of, you know, all time great hardcore, you know, hardcore band. Unfortunately, a lot of, like I said, people outside of New York don't know much about Leeway, or outside of the East Coast, I should say, Northeast and maybe parts of Europe. Like I said, in the West Coast, you don't see a ton of people. Although I have people, like I said, I have my Leeway shirt. Some people at shows will be like, dude, oh yeah, great band. Love that shirt. I mean, I get that. I've had a bunch of times it's happened. But yeah, go ahead.
So I want to add to your point, though, because you're mentioning, so the people that know them, love them, right?
Yes.
Like all absolutely. Of us, because we know them, we love them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's my key takeaway from that their legacy is that can't be tarnished from, say, bad management or didn't get the opportunities that other bands did, or, you know, the drug in, you know, influence and unfortunate circumstances like that. They are the perfect representation of a band where if you know them, you love them.
Absolutely.
That seems to be like
the
general consensus.
Yeah. That's a great point, man. There's very few people that I know that are like, yeah, they're okay. I mean, even buddies I got them into, like later on, are like, oh, fucking band's great. You know what I mean? It's very, you know, rare when you hear someone be like, yeah, they're okay. You know, it's true. Most people who know them and have been to that music, if they love thrash, if you love that crossover stuff, I don't know how you don't love Leeway. I mean, well, yeah,
if you've heard of the band, chances are you love them. That's
what
the legacy is to me. Is like, and that's like the ultimate legacy that nobody can take away from you. You
know, I agree.
The ultimate test is that your music stands the test of time. And to me, those first two albums stand the test of time. Like I could put it on like I literally did yesterday, and I enjoyed the heck out of both of them. Still, after what, 30 years, 35 almost, that those records were recorded. So,
yeah. And I really hope AJ comes out and keeps this band's legacy alive. I mean, this was his band. You know, I could see him maybe not being maybe a confrontational type of guy. Maybe he just isn't comfortable with that. So all these years where he's been quiet, I mean, very rarely talks about it. He's, like I said, he doesn't do interviews or nothing, no podcasts or nothing. You know, I just hope that this isn't like, that's it. It's gone. Because like I said, Mike and Eddie were the only ones out there. You know, Pokey, he's with Agnostic Front. And like I said, he was on, you know, but he was on 3D albums, you know, 3 to 4 albums. So was Jimmy, the poodle, the bassist. So, but those guys, really AJ, I'm really hoping that he, you know, it's time for him to give his part of the story now. If he didn't want to kind of go back and forth, I understand that. And I actually kind of, in a way, I kind of respect him greatly for doing that, because you have too many of these, as you see, New York bands, New York hardcore bands. Good Lord. I mean, how many times do these guys fight with each other? Cro-Mags. And I mean, going on a list, they're always grappling and squabbling with each other. It's just, you know, that's New York for you. You know, Type O Negative guys. I mean, you know, there's Sal Abruscato. He's been coming out against those guys lately. And it's just always bickering. And so I respect the fact that he didn't want to get into the weeds and want to, you know, throw himself in there. I get that. I just hope now, though, it's like, okay, AG, it's you, man. This was your baby, you know, and you now get to really, if you want to direct the story and maybe have it go a different trajectory or whatever it is, you want to make the legacy somewhat different. I really hope you come out and really start representing it again, because this is a band that meant a lot to a lot of people, man. Like, you know, I mean, I know I've talked to people, you know, that loved it because they were, you know, like I said, it was a diverse band too. You had, you know, so a lot of times people like that aspect of it from different cultures that brought that together. That's one thing New York hardcore was really good about. It was very rare back then, but you had a lot of diversity within the bands. And so it means a lot. This band means a lot to a lot of people, including myself. And so for those guys to be gone now and, you know, for no, it would kill me if that's it. And then we're never going to hear about anyone from the band talking about the band again. I really hope Pokey and Jimmy and AJ all come out and hopefully start, you know, taking hold of that legacy and running with it and doing something with it. Like I said, not have to play, obviously. It's going to be hard to replace a guy like Eddie, although you can. You can replace anybody these days, right? But I would love for him to kind of come out and at least talk about the band more, you know, and stake his claim on that band and his legacy in the New York hardcore history too, you know, which he just kind of likes to, you know, keep on the sidelines. So, I mean, it just sucks, man. You know, thanks for doing this, Dan. I really appreciate it because, like I said, this is a band that means so much to me. And, you know, obviously with these guys gone now, man, it's a big, you know, I mean, it's a huge void that's left in for New York hardcore too. And, you know, I just don't want them to be forgotten. You know, that's my thing. I want people to still not just be forgotten. The music will always, of course, you know, they'll live on through the music, but I don't want people to stop talking about them. You know, I want their legacy to continue to live on.
Absolutely. Matt, thanks for having me, for thinking of me. You know, you could have picked anybody else in the world to do this with you. I'm honored.
Well, yeah. Well, I first of all, I know you're great at doing this. Secondly, I know you know the band, you know, like I said,
I love a lot of people.
Yeah. So exactly. So, I mean, not everybody could do something like this. So I do appreciate you coming on. And let me just switch gears here. Now before we go here, we'll spend a few minutes talking about what you got going on. Since, like I said, we haven't heard and seen you know, you've been a while now on the CMS Network. So talk about what you got going on with your documentaries. Speaking of documentaries.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, my films. Well, one of them's right there. I needed something to cover up something so it wasn't a big eyesore for the people watching, you know. So, I just did I guess I can show it here. I literally just got them and did it myself. Was the Heretic, Don't Turn Your Back, the story of Heretic. It was my first film. You want to talk about, again, like I wanted to do them justice, right? Like, I did not want, like, a documentary like, you know, some of the ones we were talking about, you know, off the record here, right? Mm-hmm. But I wanted to do the band justice. So it's kind of like what Leeway is, right? It's like a band that, like, people know, they love, but they've never really got, like, the proper representation. And I was trying to be that guy to give them the respect and representation and tell their story in a way that, like, it's not venomous. It literally tells, I like the musical landscape of things, right? So anything that I do, I like to just focus strictly on the music. And I think this documentary, this film, does that justice, you know, for the people who have seen it, they're really into it. They really dig it. It's gotten, you know, a lot of killer accolades, and I hope it gets more just for the band's sake, not forget me, you know, the band I feel deserves it. You know, the been around for 40 years.
Yeah, wow. And, Metal Blade Records too, for people out there that don't know Heretic. You know, it wasn't like they were just some, you know, band in your backyard there. I mean, they were on a big label, and obviously it is a great story, dude. I mean, you did a great job on the film, and people should really check out that film. The story itself is really cool. You know, it's very different. It's a very unique story, you know, and what happened. And, you know, I think we were talking a little bit about that, you know, like a band like Leeway and Heretic, there's a lot of sort of similarities in terms of their career. And maybe sometimes, I think I told you, like, you know, it's kind of like, you know, Leeway, they were a bunch of nice guys, Leeway. You know what I mean? They were good people. They were nice guys. They were very polite and whatever. And Heretic's kind of very, reminds me of that too. They're just a band that were really good guys. Sometimes being in this industry, if you're a quote-unquote good guy, it ain't going to get you very far. And it can be detrimental in terms, you know, of certain things. But yeah, great story. And also a really cool, you know, cover there just to let you
Thank
know.
Thank you. Yeah. I wonder who did it.
Yeah,
would be
hell of a guy. He's the best like artist ever, man. I don't know.
Yeah, man, that would be the famous, the one and only, the legend himself, Mr. Matt Hartnett. Yeah, for helping me out with that.
Just play with you, man. Yeah, no,
putting that together. Yeah. And I got to give a shout out to Super Tom because he helped me put this whole thing together. Again, this is like total DIY, but I did my best to make it as professional looking as possible, and it's all done out of love. And I know it's kind of resonated with people that they, when they see this, it's not just like a phony product. Like I really tried to, like, you know, again, that control factor where I wanted it to look a certain way and feel like this is legit. Like it's not just like a DIY, you know, thrown together with some Xerox paper. Mm-hmm. And I feel it does the band justice. You've seen it, and I'm sure we'll talk about it hopefully on a upcoming episode.
We are going to be doing that. Yep. Very soon. We'll be having Tanner and one of the guys from Heretic on here on Aftershocks to promote the film. So definitely people will definitely stay tuned for that. That'll be coming up over the next few weeks, I believe. Yeah,
absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I want to thank you again, seriously, for all the support and influence that you and Bob specifically and Chris gave me in order for me to get to this point. Right. Cause that's, I feel like everybody needs to get their just due. And that's really important for me, which is why I'm here talking about Leeway, because I want them to get their just due and great bands. And so thank you again for being a part of this. I completed my second film, The Legacy of Sideshow Studios, which is premiering at the Gardena Cinema on June 29th, and tickets are selling really well. So definitely check out that. And I don't know how much we can say, so I'll leave that to you, but I'm involved in a couple projects, and I'm really looking forward to it. This will be available on streaming soon. So Very thanks cool. again for having me, Matt.
Yeah, of course. Well, let's just really quickly, before we do wrap things up here, we will let people know. Well, for one, like I said, we're going to be featuring Tanner here in a couple weeks with the Heretic. We're going to be talking about the doc with one of the band members. But also, both myself and Tanner, we have a film ourselves that's in the works right now. The film shoot, everything's been done. Everything's been filmed. It's just now doing the editing part. And we're hoping to get that out by early next year, 2025. We will, I guess, you know, it's one of those things I've been very hesitant to get into details about it, you know, obviously. It's just no point in getting it until it's really, you know, we're going to get a trailer out there for everybody. I think once we do that, we'll start talking about it a little bit more, but it's going to be, me and Tanner, it's my first film. He's obviously done a couple here already. So, he obviously, you know, has helped me through this. And, I think we're going to do something that's going to make, you know, that's a lot of people going to really enjoy. It's really, I will say it's based within the heavy rock scene, you know? So if you want to learn about those kind of bands, check out, Seismic Sounds of the Underground. There's some bands in there that if you want to get an idea, it's along the heavy rock, the stoner and the doom stuff. But not just that, we've also got some metal musicians in there as well. So it's not just that. And like I said, it's, I think it's going to be cool. And it's going to be one of the first of many films we plan on doing, but you know, we'll obviously talk about those other ideas and films we're going to be doing another time, but, we will be obviously, as we get closer to things getting complete, we will be discussing it more and really releasing a lot more information on it. So yeah,
absolutely. And no animals were hurt during the filming. I guarantee it.
Yeah. Well, we still got some time. Maybe we'll, no, I'm just kidding. Yeah.
You always put that disclaimer. So
yeah, exactly. But yeah, man. All right. Well, Tanner, man, I really appreciate you coming on. It's always great having you on the Aftershocks. And like I said, Tanner will be co-hosting some of these shows going forward with me as well. He's going to be, you know, obviously everyone knows Tom Brennan is my co-host now, but when we have sort of some other topics and so forth, I'm going to get, you know, Tanner involved. We're going to get Chris Aiken on here. We're going to get some other guests, you know, to co-host with me on here as well and talk about specific genres and topics and all that good stuff, whatever comes to mind. A lot of great stuff to talk about out there, obviously always is, but yeah.
Absolutely. And if you would like a copy of the Heretic film, please go to poppitproductions.com. It is all the information is available. It's poppitproductions.com. And I hope you'll support not only myself, but a great band and learn a little bit about music history.
Yes, and it is a really cool piece of music history, especially if you're a metal fan, like a good old speed metal, thrash metal fan. I think you're going to really like that documentary. You did a great job on it, Tanner. So, yeah, can't wait for it to come out for everyone to check out. And as always, so, yes, thanks, everyone, for tuning in to Aftershocks TV. For Mr. Tanner Poppett, I'm Matt Hartnett, and we'll see everybody next time. Take care.
Cheers. Thank you.